Hey guys, my name is Amy Coonan, and I am a millennial on a mission to eat, clean, cook, dress, and live more sustainably. It's because of that I'm also the host of The Town Hall, Rubicon's first and only podcast where we share sustainability stories from the industry's influencers and the biggest brands. Jam-packed with tips, tricks, and need-to-know info for those that want to do better for the planet but may not know where to start. We are covering it all. Last year, we spoke to some incredible people who are doing some incredible things for our planet. The executive director of the Leonardo DiCaprio Foundation, the CEO of Seven Generation Cleaning Products, and one of the brains behind environmental sustainability in the NBA. This season, we're kicking it up a notch. Don't forget to download and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or iHeartRadio so that you don't miss a minute. And if you can't catch us on your commute or you don't download directly, don't stress. You can check out our website at rubicon.com/townhallpodcast for recaps, reviews, and all things Town Hall. Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Town Hall. The weather's warming up. The pandemic restrictions are lifting. You know, people are vaccinated. We're getting ready to vacation a little bit. I was talking this morning. There's a tangible excitement in the air, very different than last summer. Today, we are highlighting an eco-friendly flip-flop brand and a fellow B Corp, Tidal New York. And I'm very excited to be joined by co-founder Tim Gibb to kind of kick off our summer. What better way than with sandals? Tim, thanks so much for telling your story with us today.
Thank you for having me, and always nice to speak to another B Corp.
Okay, so take me through the process here a little bit, because I doubt when you were growing up, you said, I'm going to make a sustainable flip-flop for a living. So how did you come up with the product? Walk me through your professional and personal timeline a bit.
Yeah, so my brother and I founded the company in 2014. Our father was, both our parents were in retail when we were born out in Omaha, Nebraska. And then my father was in the footwear business, and his job and profession brought us out to the East Coast. And so footwear was sort of always in our blood, and we went through college and both tried to go into other professions and just wound up back here because just family, friends, and it was a fun industry and interesting to us. And so we both got into the sourcing side and both made nice careers, early careers out of it, working for companies like Mark Fisher Footwear and Nine West Group and Brown Shoe, which is now Caleres, and doing all their sourcing. And so we were overseas in Asia, Mexico, Africa, looking at what was going on in the supply chain and also sitting in meetings. And, you know, post 2008, 2009, you had the rise of private label and you had an extreme boom of discount channels. So TJ Maxx, Ross, brands like that. And it was all based on special makeups, which meant the salespeople now needed the production people in the sales meetings also. So we got to ride front row to both what was going on in the sales conversations and then what was going on in the factory negotiations also. So seeing the opposing tensions between the downward force of price in the US based on a discount economy post 2008, 2009. But the flip side of that was globalization and the all boats rise promise of it, which was the promise of globalization, why it was supposed to be so great for the global economy. But we had this sort of quote unquote issue where we had rising labor prices overseas. So you had downward pressure from the state side on the retail end and then upward pressure on labor wages overseas. And so we looked at that in tandem with our just overall feeling of being in overseas production facilities and the humanitarian end of that, and decided, you know, made a hypothesis that this was going to be a problem down the line and that there would be something that would happen that would sort of break in terms of that relationship. And we kind of just looked at that. We canvassed the footwear space and said, you know, what can we do that's lower input where we can really master everything about it, master the materials and completely own the supply chain? And the answer for us was pretty simple. It was flip-flops really hadn't been touched in a long time, particularly the Zori flip-flops. So that sort of you know, the thong that we all think of, the kind of, you know, as people say, rubber flip-flops. And so that's what we landed on. Two pieces, pretty simple to make overall, but that allowed us to really dig deep on it.
And where do you think you had kind of your environmental epiphany? What do you think sparked your passion for sustainability?
I have, so my brother, he won't really, you know, he'll probably be upset that I'm mentioning this on the call, but my brother was the, you know, he was the first high school hippie in our household. My parents both came up in the, you know, in the 60s and 70s and, you know, had some anti-war, which always kind of coalesced with environmentalism and things like that. So, you know, they came up in the summer of love and they saw that, and we were always, you know, told to be creatives and, you know, kind of like fostered that whole artistic side as well as business side. And through that, both of us, you know, is like kind of fell into music, and that led us to different lines of thinking and thought and people. And for me particularly, it was a book about it's a book by Daniel Quinn called Ishmael, and it's about a telepathic gorilla that teaches a young man that there's actually multiple narratives of how the world can be run. And that was, I read that when I was, I think, 16 or 17, and it was my first real like aha moment of, hey, the grand narrative that we're all kind of told doesn't have to be the only one. And there's different pathways that we can take society. And so that was really the first moment for me. And it never left me. It just, that once you have that switch turned and your eyes open to possibilities that you weren't necessarily, you know, at face value told were out there, there's just, it's hard to go back. It's like Neo in the Matrix, right?
So the switch is turned on. You landed in flip-flops.
Yep.
Let's talk about the shoes themselves. What makes them so unique?
Yeah, so that was like a big piece of when we were putting this together is, you know, we don't want to just make what's being made overseas. Like, it has to be better. We're going to have to, you know, these are going to be more expensive just on labor alone. But how do we take it back to the way things used to be and how we were raised? It was like, it was more about, and our father coming up in wholesale retail really helped with this too, was, you know, we got into, since the 80s and hyper-capitalism and this sort of neoliberal capitalism mode that we're in now that we're trying to work ourselves out of, really was all about, and when it came to shareholder primacy, it was like less about a relationship with the customer and more just about profit maximization. And that meant, you know, they didn't have to last as long. And there was things like planned obsolescence and all these crazy terms that were basically like, let's make stuff that breaks. And we were like, let's not do that. Let's make stuff that lasts a long time and have a reputation and build our repeat business on reputation and quality. And if we're going to have to charge more for our product, then we want to like pack it with good reasons for it to be purchased. You know, we want our customers to feel really, really good about it. And that is from the product all the way through to the ethics of the company. So we dove into the materials, and that kind of drove some of the machinery purchasing too, but polyurethane for all the different outsole possibilities that there were is really the best material out there. It has a higher durability, it has a higher abrasion resistance, and most importantly, it has a much more robust compression set, which is opposed to like EVA and some other materials. The compression set is best explained as like energy return or like bounce. So compression set just basically means how long does it take before the cellular integrity of the compound starts to break down. So we say that our flip-flops are 5 times more durable than the average flip-flop, and that is directly speaking to the compression set. So the material feels very similar to EVA on the shelf, but the real magic for us is, you know, after you've been wearing them for a day, they still feel like they did when you slipped them on. So that's great on the micro level on your daily trip. And if you're walking around, you know, And we've gotten customer reviews about music festivals and never being able to wear flip-flops to them until our flip-flops, or walking around Italy on the cobblestone all day and still feeling great at the end of the day. So you have those great micro stories just like in the moment in the day. But then you think about how that extrapolates out to the actual lifespan of the product itself. These are built to last for years, you know, years and years and years. But at the same time, we're pressing on the renewable content. We have some really exciting things for later this year on that. We're going to make a pretty huge jump there. We're already at 30%.
Yeah, I read somewhere.
The idea is to make them.
I read somewhere that the shoes are actually made from renewable materials and excess waste.
Yeah. So that's been a really cool journey for us. We've been pushing, we work, the nice thing about having the control of the supply chain is we source everything in the U.S. And that's not about, it's less to do with like nationalism, and it's much more to do with a decentralization of the supply of the global supply chain to more local supply chain. So when I say we're domestically sourced, we're really coming at it from like a made local standpoint. So it's not necessarily about made in USA as much as it is, this should be a movement everywhere that we should be decentralizing and localizing the supply chains for a litany of reasons. But it also allows you to work really closely with your vendors. And so we work with a polyurethane company in Missouri, and we were in a conversation with them, and they had a technology that was using castor oil, which is popular. The problem with it is now is our first foray into a sustainable input. The only issue with it was the viscosity of it makes it very hard to process over a certain amount. So we could only get to like 13% then. And the other issue was it was coming from India. So we were sourcing everything and talking about our credentials and, you know, all this, but had this ironic kind of issue where the most, you know, the renewable input in our formulation was coming from the other side of the world. And so that wasn't going to cut it for us. So we kept working with them, and there's a cool technology now that we coined, variable biomass oil, where they're able to take in multiple streams, waste streams. So it can be plant biomass, forest biomass, animal waste stream, or municipal waste stream. It doesn't have to be a homogeneous input, but you get a homogeneous output. So you get this very stable building block now that can replace fossil carbon in our flip-flops, and that allowed us to now start to scale. And like I said, as we've been working with this, we've pushed it up to 30% now, and we're getting ready to make a big announcement in the next couple months, but we're going to make a pretty sizable leap there also. So super exciting. We're really excited about that. And the nice thing is it doesn't affect the usability of them. It's an end life, you know, benefit.
No, it seems like a really circular solution. And, you know, you talked about having these relationships with your vendors and, you know, made local. And it's a real point of pride for the company, obviously, is owning the whole supply chain. I'm curious, how did the pandemic impact your process at all?
We're a really lean group, and we had a factory in, our factory's in New Rochelle, and then we had a design office in New York City. So we were sort of already used to being decentralized in terms of the operations. But we're also like on our factory operations, we're a really lean team, and all of our stations are like 50 feet or further away. So we were already really well situated for any, you know, sort of social distancing or anything like that to continue operations. And then beyond that, it was really just taking the next step and, you know, increasing the cleanings of the factory and making sure that there is plenty of sanitizer, face shields, gloves, masks, all that for the staff. But we weathered it pretty well. We were able to make it through not unscathed from a business standpoint. We took a hit on revenue. But in terms of the overall operations of the company, we were able to shift and move. And we're blessed with a really amazing staff that really just wanted to figure out what needs to be done. And we've adapted, and we're feeling good about what the future holds.
So you became B Corp certified in 2021, and that is a huge accomplishment in and of itself. but to work to become certified, you know, throughout the last year, that's been so tough for so many. What does your B Corp certification mean to you guys?
So the B Corp handbook is like a guide that they published a decade or more ago. And it had been literally on our desk in our offices since we opened the doors. So it was like always this thing that we wanted to get to. And we always felt like, you know, we're Yvon Chouinard, you know, we look at him as just the vanguard of this whole movement, which he is. And because they've accomplished so much at Patagonia, it was like, oh man, we're not good enough. We're not good enough. We're not good enough. And we were never really paying it. We hadn't done the assessment. It always felt huge. And so we just kept trying to be a great company. And then we were approached by, there's really great B Corp consultants out there. And like for the listeners, I just want them to know that there are people that can help you through this. We worked with a great group called Impact Growth Partners, and they actually reached out to us and said, there's no reason why you shouldn't be doing this, and we can help you through it. So we worked with them to go through the process and have it make sense for us. And because that's like one of the limitations of the B Corp certification is you're trying to take all these different variable businesses and fit them through a certification process. So sometimes you do need that somebody to decipher it for you. But for us, the reason for doing it is multitude of reasons. First and foremost, we want trust. We want the customers to trust us. So like our flip-flops are now USDA bio-preferred certified based on a renewable content in it. So it's like that certifies the product. The B Corp certification certifies the company, so that people can feel really, really good about purchasing from us and know that we are not greenwashing. Like if there's one thing that right now we're on a crusade against, it's greenwashing. Cannot stand it. Think it's one of the worst things in the industry at the moment in general, beyond just that fashion, but that's our circle of influence. And so, you know, that was what it was about for us, was about trust. Like, yes, we want to measure ourselves and we want to have that framework for how can we be better. And that's one of the best things about the assessment is just assessing where you are and where your shortcomings are and where you can be better. So there's those things, and that's helped us to inform future goals. But the B Corp certification for us was just really about making sure that the customers knew that we stood by every word that we spoke and that we were truthful.
Before I let you get back to, you know, saving the planet and my summer closet, I'm going to ask you 10 quick questions in our rapid fire game. And you're just going to shoot off the first thing that comes to your mind. You ready?
Okay.
All right. Number one, what does your morning routine look like?
Waking up with my 2-year-old and having breakfast with her. That's the most of it.
What was one of the best shows that you binge watched during lockdown?
My wife and I are really into this Formula One show on Netflix at the moment.
Okay.
That's the best answer that I have.
That counts. If one celebrity, dead or alive, could play you in the movie of your life, who would you cast as yourself?
Golly, that's a tough one. Mark Hamill, because I'm a Star Wars guy.
What is one item that you never leave home without?
Some sort of music playing device.
That is a perfect segue. What was your first concert?
First concert was, this is no indication on my broader music inclinations these days, but I think if I remember right, it was Billy Joel's Stormfront tour at the Hartford Civic Center with my parents.
What's one food you could eat over and over again and not get sick of it?
Stir fry.
What is one eco-friendly action that you make sure that you do every day?
Compost.
That counts. And for this one, no need to say Rubicon. And I know you mentioned Patagonia earlier, but what's another B Corp that you love?
Wow, there's a ton. You know, I'm going to plug our B Corp consultants again, because they are a B Corp also, and that's Impact Growth Partners. I think one of the most important things that can be done is be a good steward for the B Corps.
When you were little, what did you want to be when you grew up?
A philosopher or musician.
And lastly, what does success mean to you?
Success is a self-sustaining company that is where there's employee ownership aspect and where everybody has a voice.
Thank you so much, Tim. Where can people learn more about Tidal, about all the good work that you guys are doing? Now's your chance to shameless plug.
Yeah, www.tidalnewyork.com. Tidal like a tidal wave, New York spelled out. And yeah, we're dropping all sorts of new colors and collections just in time for getting back outside.
I always love telling sustainability stories, and I always love connecting with other B Corps, but there's something really special when you get to talk to one that really walks the walk. So thank you for all of your hard work that you're doing.
Thank you so much for highlighting us. Really appreciate it.